Where have all the home builders gone?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Glad you're with us for the morning open. What little home building that was going on is even less. And there's enough chocolate talk to give us all a sugar rush, the latest on Who Wants Cadbury coming up. But first, where's Wall Street? Markets are down right now. The S&P pretty much flat, down just about 0.01%. The NASDAQ down about 0.25%. The Dow down about 15 points at 10,422. European markets higher right now, under 0.5%. And in Asia, stocks today were mixed. Well, as we told you, housing construction fell more than 10% in October. Building permits down too. Let's get some analysis from Richard DeKayser, president of Woodley Park Research. He's with us live this morning from Washington. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Steve.
So we know the housing market is shaky, but why the big dip?
Well, the conventional wisdom says that builders are pulling back after rushing to market a lot of properties that they were hoping to get in before the first-time homebuyer tax credit expired, which was slated for year-end. And there's probably some truth to that. However, two comments. Number one, the credit has since been extended. Not only has it been extended into next year, but it's been expanded. Initially, it applied only to first-time home buyers. Now it applies to first-time home buyers plus people who already own a home. And additionally, we had really bizarre weather. October was the wettest month on record. And those records go back to the 1890s. That tends to interfere with home building. It was also the third coolest October in 115 years. So these are the sort of things that definitely take an effect on housing. I don't think it's all about the tax credits. I think a part of this is noise, if you will, that comes from bizarre climate.
We got quickly, Richard, we got October consumer prices up slightly. Are we still talking inflation?
Well, it's only slightly. Basically, the October numbers were very much in line with what we saw previously. It was a little bit elevated because of energy prices. Gasoline soared, but that tends not to last for long. And if you look at the underlying trend, it's basically where we've been for the past year, somewhere between 1.5% and 2%. I wouldn't call that concerning.
All right. Richard DeKayser joining us from Washington. Richard, thanks.
My pleasure.
We got word today that Hershey's is considering joining a bid for the British candy maker Cadbury. The American chocolate giant, together with the Italian confectioner Ferrero, is reviewing options. And that comes just days after Kraft made a $16.7 billion bid for Cadbury, one that was quickly dismissed. Let's check in with Catherine Boyle, covering the story for the Times of London. She's with us this morning. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Steve.
So we have this sweet triangle here, and I'm curious, what makes Cadbury so tempting to these companies?
Well, Cadbury is a great British company with a lot of brands. They've also had a very comprehensive reorganization recently by an American chief executive, so they're a lot more efficient than they used to be.
I want to talk about these two companies, Catherine, Hershey's and Ferrero. They're very different in their backgrounds and in their financial strength. Structurally, how would this work?
Well, that is the question on everyone over here's lips and a lot of Cadbury shareholders too. Obviously, the statements that they have made this morning are still very much showing that this is a sort of preliminary thought. And obviously, neither of them are public companies, so they don't have access to the public markets, which, whereas in contrast, Kraft has $9 billion of financing already in place. So, that question still has to be answered fully.
And Cadbury called Kraft's hostile takeover bid from last week as derisory. I mean, what makes Hershey's and Ferrero believe their bid wouldn't be looked down upon, too?
Well, the one thing that Hershey and Ferrero could do to make sure their bid isn't looked down upon is to make it make a higher bid than Kraft have. Kraft's bid is composed of about a third cash and about two-thirds shares in Kraft. So, and I think a lot of shareholders would really like that cash element to be raised. So if Hershey and Ferrero can offer more immediate cash returns to shareholders, then I think they're going to be a lot more receptive.
All right, Catherine Boyle, reporter for the Times of London, joining us this morning. Catherine, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we've got enough chocolate this holiday season, but we could see a shortage of another particular staple, pumpkin pie. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
The harvest was already looking meager this year, but yesterday Nestle announced that rain in the Midwest destroyed much of the remaining pumpkins. Nestle controls 85% of that crop for canning. It shows up in grocery stores under the Libby's label. Food marketer Al Hammond says grocery stores will need to be creative when advertising this traditional holiday meal.
It's certainly one of the things that you think of that you have to have for a Thanksgiving dinner, but it could be good news for cherry pies and pecan pies.
Industry analyst Harry Balzer says pumpkin is the second most popular pie consumed in America. That's all because of Thanksgiving.
There'll still be pumpkin on that table, pumpkin pie. There may be less of it. The slices may be smaller, but you're very difficult to change traditions in this country.
The LA Times reports supermarkets have no plans to raise prices, and groceries say they have enough to get through Thanksgiving. But after that, if Nestle runs out, it won't have any more of that canned puree until August. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Wednesday, November 18th, 2009, at marketplace.org. It was 3 days of smiles for the camera, a little bowing, too, in Japan. And now President Obama's trip to China has wrapped up. Next stop on his Asian whirlwind tour, South Korea. And like the other places he's visited, the expectations are low there as well. Here's Marketplace Asia correspondent Scott Tong.
South Korean officials want to push the president on free trade. Washington and Seoul have already hammered out a broad-ranging deal. It just needs to be ratified by lawmakers on both sides. If it happens, U.S. industry would benefit from lower tariffs in the Korea market. Economist Chan-guk He says take American airplanes.
Korean buyers have options of Boeing or Airbus, and a little bit of advantage can tip the scale.
Korea is ready to ratify, but top congressional Democrats are not. Mainly, they say it's unfair to U.S. automakers. They want to renegotiate, so Seoul cuts more taxes and regulations that affect American car sales there. Last year, the Big Three exported just 7,000 vehicles to South Korea.
You can buy U.S.-made vehicles, but not many are actually buying them.
Meanwhile, Korean brands like Hyundai and Kia export 100 times more cars to the U.S. Could be unfair trade or just bad American products. Either way, expectations in Seoul are low for a breakthrough on the stalled trade deal. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
In the state of Wyoming, there's talk of a new tax on wind development. State lawmakers there are meeting today to gauge support for the idea. From Wyoming Public Radio, Molly Messick has more.
In a state that's used to getting a lot of revenue from the energy industry, it's not a big jump to think about taxing wind. State Senator John Schiffer says it should be taxed by the kilowatt hour.
I believe wind energy development should pay their own way, just like coal does or gas or uranium.
Schiffer says wind development comes at a cost. There's the use of local roads, the potential effects on wildlife, and the loss of open space. But the wind industry says Wyoming's immediate push for new income could hurt the state in the long run.
Taxes could shut the door on wind development in Wyoming right now. And if that is the case, then nobody's going to benefit economically from the development of wind energy.
Cheryl Riley is the executive director of the Wyoming Power Producers Coalition. She says the bigger issue here is that Wyoming is far from major cities where electricity is needed, and it's expensive to move energy from one place to another. Plus, she says Wyoming is talking about adding taxes at a time when other states are offering credits and exemptions. From Laramie, Wyoming, I'm Molly Messick for Marketplace.
Looks like U.S. foreclosure rates aren't going to peak until next year. That's according to the online database Realty Track. So more and more people are going to foreclosure auctions where they hope to get a deal on the American dream. We sent reporter Sean Cole to one in Boston and told him to keep his hands at his sides.
The auction was in a small ballroom at the Boston Park Plaza Hotel. It was held, hang on, here's the obligatory auctioneering sound.
I'm paying 40,000 about 30 bucks. Here down 40,000 now.
It was held by Real Estate Disposition Corporation, or REDC, which travels all around the country helping banks offload their quote-unquote distressed properties. About 200 people showed up to bid on just 36 homes scattered all over New England. One sold for less than a quarter of its original value. REDC makes its money from a 5% buyer's premium. It's doing pretty well right now, and a spokesman, Rick Weinberg, told me it's going to do even better next year.
We're already in the process of basically having an auction almost every other day. And we could wind up doing an auction on an average of almost a daily basis.
In the last 2.5 years, REDC has sold $6 billion worth of property for banks, despite a little lull this year after banks agreed to temporary moratoria on foreclosures.
It was a speed bump on the Indianapolis 500.
Rick Sharga is a senior vice president for Realty Track.
And we have had 9 consecutive months now of more than 300,000 foreclosure actions a month since the moratoria were lifted.
Which, of course, is horrible. Unless you're an auction company like REDC.
Going once, twice, third in final call, 92.59.
Or you're one of the bidders getting a great deal on somebody else's loss. For example, at the auction I went to, George and Mary McLeod landed a second home on Cape Cod for $90,000. They hugged and kissed after putting in the winning bid.
I prayed about it. Good Lord.
You prayed about it?
Yes, I did. I did pray about it, you know. And we said don't go above 80, but then what the heck, you know what I mean? Always can sell it.
True. The question is for how much. In Boston, I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace.
There was a surprise apology yesterday by the Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein for their participation in the credit crisis. A few hours later, the company said it was starting a $500 million program to help small business, leading some to believe there are no coincidences. And one of the questions since the crisis began has been, how do we get more money flowing to small business again? At this hour, the Treasury and the Small Business Administration are sponsoring a forum. From the Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, here's Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman.
Scratch the surface at many small businesses and you can see the credit crunch up close and personal. Reduced credit lines, bank loans called in, canceled credit cards, and the consequences, laid off workers and reduced inventory. The stimulus package passed by Congress made it easier for banks to make SBA loans and waived fees to borrowers. And that helped a lot, says Bob Coleman, who puts out a report on small business lending.
That lending is up 40% over what it was in the dark days of November and December.
Still, problems are looming. SBA's running out of stimulus money earlier than expected. And new initiatives like higher loan limits and bailout money for community banks haven't kicked in yet. And Coleman says there's only so much SBA can do if big banks that got bailouts don't start lending again.
I believe the criticism of the larger banks not lending enough is valid. But in their defense, the regulators have been very tough, i.e. clean up that balance sheet, be risk adverse.
And with banks still failing at record rates, it'll probably be a while before the survivors loosen up lending. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And finally, in France, there's a warm and fuzzy hotel suite where you can play hamster. It comes complete with giant wheel for workout and hay to sleep on. The owners actually run a company which rents unusual rooms to people seeking adventures. They say some adults wish they could have had pet hamsters when they were kids. The hotel suite runs $150 a night, but seems people are asking nowadays for Wi-Fi and television next to those food pellets and water bottle. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.